The Athletic.
Totally Football League Show Early Bird Special. We're halfway through the Championship playoff semis where it's advantage Forest, but there's nothing between Luton and Huddersfield. Meanwhile, in League Two, Harry McCurdy's got the X Factor, and Northampton out of it after the first leg, Cobblers. This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. Yeah, we're a little bit earlier than usual, listener, today. That's because the second leg of the Huddersfield Luton game takes place tonight. As you listen to this, hopefully, or tomorrow night, as we record on Sunday. Joining me, Matt Davis-Adams, are semi-serious Adrian Clark.
Hello.
And the Sky Sports principal purveyor of playoffs, Michelle Owen. What a weekend you've had, Michelle.
That is some brilliant alliterations. Alliteration. See, I've done so many games now, I just can't speak. Yeah, 8 playoffs, and I've done 6 of them. So it's been a good week or so. It's been good fun.
Well, obviously, therefore, we're going to start with one of the two that you didn't do. At Bramall Lane, it finished Sheffield United 1, Nottingham Forest 2. Only the second time the Blades have lost at home since October, but given the way the game panned out, they might not be too downbeat about that. Richard Sutcliffe, the Athletic's sharpest blade, writes, to paraphrase the late, great Brian Clough, I wouldn't say this was Sheffield United's worst defensive display on home soil under Paul Heckingbottom, but it was in the top one. Clarkie, I feel like I should be really pleased and thrilled and over the moon, and yet there's a bit of ruefulness, and if there's one thing I hate doing, it's ruing.
Yeah, no, I understand that completely, because Nottingham Forest were superior by some distance and probably could have won this 4-1, or 4-0 really, because it was quite a soft concession, wasn't it, towards the end. Fodderingham kept Sheffield United in the game, didn't he, in that first half, where just every time Forest went forward, they scythed through them. They just had too much pace. And I think I'd seen them the week before Sheffield United against Fulham, where obviously they were on top. But in little flashes of that game, Fulham got in down the sides of the centre-halves really easily. And it did plant a seed in my head that, wow, if you know, Fulham aren't really trying and they're getting down the sides of the centre-backs, I think Brennan Johnson and co might have a little bit of joy, and they did, didn't they? I mean, Surridge it was for the first goal that made that good run down the sides. And yeah, in particular down Forest right, which has been just awesome all season. They really made hay, didn't they? And I think there will be slight regret that they didn't get a healthier advantage. But it was a good performance, very good.
So Jack Colback gets the opening goal. I feel like, Michelle, he's quite emblematic of the improvement Forest have made under Steve Cooper, because he was out of the team and going nowhere when Cooper took over. He looked like a man who desperately wanted to be somewhere else. And all of a sudden, he's a cornerstone of the team, albeit not playing in the position in which he's known for.
Yeah, you'd say a square peg in a round hole, but for Forest fans, I don't think it's felt like that at all. I listened to this game. I was driving down to Sky yesterday, and it seems, as you just described it, Forest absolutely dominated. And then I walked into the building, it was 2-0, and I walked in and it was 2-1. It just changes the whole complexion of the tie, doesn't it? But there's some positive stats if you're a Forest fan. I've been having a little look. And Sheffield United would be only the second side in the history of second-tier playoffs to overturn a first-leg deficit away from home. So that's positive for Forest, but I just hope they don't, for their sake, ruin their missed chances. It sounded like they absolutely dominated from what I was hearing. And yeah, like you said, it's a side that Steve Cooper has got working together, players maybe playing where they don't want to play, but it seems a lot different than when I was there in late September, or was it must have been mid-September when you lost to Cardiff. It just didn't seem like a happy camp. And he's always got such positivity, Steve Cooper. He's like, yeah, we just want to go again. And whether he actually does want to go again straight away, I don't know. But he talks a good game, and he makes everyone feel like they're completely up for it. They're completely ready. And I'd still probably fancy Forest, but it's so hard to say, isn't it?
Brennan Johnson's goal, Clarkie, it was a nice finish, but I think the best bit was the lovely moment of the shot of his dad, David, who'd scored there for Forest in the playoffs in 03, celebrating. That was just absolutely magnificent, heartwarming.
It was gold, wasn't it? Yeah, it's like, As a parent, you're sometimes maybe a bit self-conscious. You don't want to be seen, you don't want to embarrass anyone. You know, you want to, a lot of people, probably myself included, might think, oh, I'll be a bit restrained. But that he was just gone, wasn't he? It was brilliant. I loved it. He was just caught up in the moment and proud of his son. I mean, he must be so proud of what he's done. He's still a very young boy, Brennan Johnson. and he's a top player, real quality. And that was a good finish, wasn't it? Joe Lolley obviously gets all the credit for that, the way that he robbed John Egan. But that's Forest, isn't it? It's get in the faces. It's you have it, bang. We're going to win it. And then as soon as they win the ball, they're just on you. It's excellent from a tactical point of view. They're just menaces, Nottingham Forest, from turnovers, transitions. They're dynamite. And I don't know how Forest can stop them, because when you've got that pace advantage, because the centre-halves and the wing-backs aren't that quick for Sheffield United. When you've got that speed advantage, it's pretty hard to negate. I think Sheffield United have got experience. They've got good technical players. And up front, they've got Gibbs White, who can turn a game with a piece of magic. But Forest have more ways to hurt them, in my opinion, than Sheffield United do.
Just wanted to pick up on Brennan Johnson there as well. 6 goals and 4 assists in his last 11. It's incredible. And of course, you were touching on his father there. The only Forest player to ever score in both legs of a playoff semi-final for the club is him. And history could repeat itself with his son, which is almost poetic, isn't it, for Forest's sake, not Sheffield United.
I'm going to the game. I'm doing commentary.
Are you?
Really excited. Yeah, lucky. Yeah, I feel very lucky to get that game, and it'll be some atmosphere.
It's so loud, isn't it? It's so loud. And Prutt and I actually swapped over on these, I'm sure he won't mind me saying, because he was keen, obviously, as an ex-Forest player to do them. And yeah, he was saying how much he's looking forward to it. But I just think it's, for me, that contrast from late September, bottom of the table, to where they are now, just can't emphasise enough. I feel like we're talking a lot about Forest here and not Sheffield United. But, for me, in the 4 teams, most people would have them as favourites to go up at the moment. But it's just such a change since Steve Cooper came in. And just that Brennan Johnson point, I did that Cardiff game with his dad, and his dad was saying he wants to be let go, he wants to be free. And it was a very rigid system before, where he wasn't allowed, well, for want of a better word, maybe he didn't quite have as much freedom. And now Brennan Johnson has that creative license, almost, just to be a bit more free and express himself, and it's paying dividends on the pitch.
Adrian, you mentioned about Sheffield United and their vulnerability in terms of getting in behind the defence. Is it too late at this stage of the season to change your game plan in that regard defensively? Or does a good manager react and say, actually, we've been weak in this area in the last 2 games, we need to change something?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I would maybe set the line a little bit deeper against Nottingham Forest, and just to not so that you don't leave as much space in between the wide centre backs and the wing backs. But they won't change the system, will they? They're very used to it. I don't think there's a lot of wriggle room, really, because of a lack of players' availability. So no, I think the shape will be the same, but surely they will learn some lessons, and they'll look to slow down Nottingham Forest, won't they? I think that's the key. Sometimes what you've got to do, though, I mean, is take that chance. I'm sort of arguing against what I just said there by setting a deeper line. Sometimes it's better to stop the service at source, e.g. press really hard and high and be aggressive, so that the quality that goes into Brennan Johnson or into the forward players is weakened. So it's a difficult choice, I think, for Heckenbottom here. He'll want more from Norwood. Absolutely more. Don't think he had a good game. Zinchenko won that duel, didn't he? Absolutely, hands down. Making runs off him, pressing, hounding him. Couldn't get his foot on the ball. So Forrest will try and do that again. Can Norwood create a bit of space for himself and dictate the game? So I think for Sheffield United to have any chance of going through, he needs to be on it on Tuesday night.
We made so much, didn't we, Michelle, of their excellent home record. 1 win in their last 7 away. That was in the game against QPR on the penultimate day of the season. And that's the only time in that run they've scored more than 1 goal. I guess it's kind of irrelevant in the playoffs, but it's not a particularly positive statistic to go into this game with.
No, I mean, yeah, how much do you look at stats in the playoffs? I still think they're relative, because you've still got to go away and overturn that deficit, like we said earlier. Sheffield United have never won an away game in the playoffs, which is another nasty stat for them. But it's like cup football, isn't it, really? It's just unfortunate. Obviously, the side that's away first always has the advantage, in my opinion. But it's not that cut and dry. Paul Heckenbottom has been promoted in 3 of his 4 playoff campaigns, twice as a player and once as a manager. So, yeah, I don't think anyone's writing Sheffield United off.
Tension. So much tension. Meanwhile, on Friday night, it ended all square between the towns of Luton and Huddersfield at Kenilworth Road. Daniel Sinani put Huddersfield ahead before Sonny Bradley equalised. Michelle, I'm loath to start the conversation talking about refereeing decisions, but seeing as there was a controversial one after 10 seconds, we kind of have to, don't we?
Yeah, we made it 9 seconds, just to be pedantic. But I said to the boys, I said to Curtis and Joby, do you think maybe... was it so early in the game that it was a very big decision to make? And they said, of course, that shouldn't affect anything. It's a really tough one because it's a big occasion. The adrenaline's going. But that was a red card, potentially, at worst. But it had to be a penalty. And, yeah, Toffolo is clean for the header, isn't he? And James Bree coming in behind him, he's got nowhere to go. He's not goal side. And he shoves him. And obviously we have the luxury of replays and things, and there will be VAR in the Championship playoff final. And thank goodness there is, because there was, I would say, three decisions in that game you'd probably want to look at. But that was the biggest one. And I don't want to be too harsh on referees, but these are season-defining moments.
And it was definitely too early. I think if that happens 10 minutes into the game...
You can't... I know you can say, like, 9 seconds, but... whether it's 9 seconds, 9 minutes, 90 minutes, it's still the same challenge, isn't it? Yeah, exactly.
But we're all human. And I think he held back. I think he thought it was easier not to make a decision, but he was wrong to do so. I know that the boys that work with you at Sky weren't convinced that the Cameron Jerome one was a penalty, but I did think that was too. I think so in that respect, I think the two big calls evened out. Yeah, so it didn't affect the game, in my opinion.
Well, this is what Nathan Jones said about that Cameron Jerome one. It's nailed on. It's clear. Because they had half an appeal in the first seconds of the game, he hasn't given it. They don't have that. He gives it. And it's a red card.
That's a great Welsh accent, by the way.
Pretty personal. I'm half Welsh, so it should come naturally to me. The away side again, Michelle. Probably the better side here overall. And a little bit disappointed not to be going back to Yorkshire with a win.
I think Luton were better in the first half, and then Huddersfield came into their own in the second, which doesn't surprise me because Corbran would have looked at it tactically and gone, right, we'll tweak this, we'll tweak that. Little things that we don't see, because that's what he does. He plays the opposition, not necessarily to Huddersfield's strengths. He's done it all season. I think Huddersfield would be far the happier of the two with the scoreline, because Luton's away form against the top 10 sides or so is pretty terrible. I think they've only beaten one of them. So Huddersfield be by far the happier. They were much better in the second half. It was a thrilling first half, and then it went a bit cagey in the second half. But look, I wouldn't write off Luton by any means, but going to the John Smith Stadium, that's a great crowd when they get going. They got the result there. It was a month ago. They beat them on home soil in the league. So at the moment, everything's, for me, pointing towards Huddersfield progressing. But I'd be very happy for Nathan Jones and Luton to prove me wrong, of course.
And the other thing working against them, Clarke, is their injury list, isn't it, Luton? Adebayo might be able to make it back for the second leg, but Berry, Ruddockham, Panzu and Onyedinma all out. It's the wrong time of year for this to be happening.
Yeah, it's bad timing, isn't it? It's by no means their strongest 11, is it? And the goalkeeper's new, and fair play to the goalkeeper, Matt Ingram, because he's put off his honeymoon, hasn't he, to be part
Maldives.
Of
Maldives. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for his sake, he needs to go up, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. I think he was slightly at fault for the first goal. He was a little bit slow to get down. It was the only place that they could put the shot, and he was, he should have had that part of the goal covered. But I thought Luton were excellent in the first half. Like, easily the better side. They took the ball by the horns. They really asserted themselves. And I think that they needed that second goal when they were on top. It was a great ball in, wasn't it, from the goal, Cal Naismith, from the wide free kick. Fantastic. And in the second half, it just got all tactical, didn't it? I think Corbran switched wingers, didn't they? They flipped sides. That paid off. He had to make a substitute with Pippa coming on. He got a bit more joy. So, yeah, little things worked out. And then I think Nathan then tweaked his system, went to a back four and pushed Naismith up and tried to overload the midfield. It was all two tacticians going at it for 45 minutes, but not that many clear-cut chances. And I think that's just the way that game panned out. I can imagine the second leg being another sort of tactical battle as well, to be honest, because these two love it.
They do. It might be a long night as well, mightn't it, Michelle? I mean, there's so little between these teams. We've referenced that game at the John Smith Stadium between them last month a couple of times, but surely that doesn't have that much of an impact on how Monday goes.
Yeah, I just think Luton, with the injuries, though, more depleted, unfortunately, for them, and whether they risk Elijah Adebayo. I mean, do you push him? And then do you maybe, unfortunately, do something bad to him and he can't make the final? If you make the final, how on earth do you play it? It's Nathan Jones. It's easy to forget the injury problems they've had, but yeah, I could definitely see it. I love extra time and pens. Like, let's have it. It's the playoffs. But yeah, last month was a pretty tight first half and no one really put a big tackle in. And then the second half, it just went off. There was the shove and the yellow card and the penalty that Adebayo missed, of course, as well. So it wasn't that cut and dry last month for Huddersfield, to be fair. I think it's going to be a great game for the neutral. I've got to say, every playoff is delivered. Not one nil-nil yet. And that's why some people, including me, call it the best part of the season.
Two great managers, aren't they, Clarkey? But I kind of feel like Nathan Jones and Luton go hand in hand now. He had his dalliance with Stoke, didn't really work out. But Corberan is going to be a wanted man, isn't he? Maybe not this summer, but given the season that he's had, he's going to be attracting admiring glances.
He's clever, isn't he? He's got that quick footballing brain. You can see it whirring. He's always looking to sort of just do these little dinkers. And yeah, I think that other teams would have spotted that clearly. It's a phenomenal season. We all thought Huddersfield were going to be bottom half. It's what he's achieved with that group of players is incredible. And also the recruitment, which has been highly praised for a number of weeks now. But yeah, they were players that you would look at and think, well, yeah, where do they fit in? But he had a vision. And he knows exactly how he wants his team to play. So, yeah, it's going to be, I think it'll be quite cagey. I really do, because they're locked together at one apiece. That first goal is going to be really important. So Huddersfield are fast starters, aren't they? So Luton have got to be ready in that first 15 or 20 minutes just to quieten that crowd. If they can get through that, then maybe they can, they can work their way towards nicking a 1-0 sometime in the second half. I think in Cornick, they've got a guy that can break quickly. He's got pace. I thought Cameron Jerome played pretty well in the game. He unsettled their defenders at times. So I don't think there's that much of a need to rush back Adebayo if he's not quite right. I think those two can do some damage. I thought Sonny Bradley was really good. Really impressed with him. Not just his defending, but some of his longer passes. Excellent. So, I make Huddersfield marginal favourites, but there's really not much to choose.
All right, well, that's what Clarkey thinks. What about Paddy Power? Let's bring in producer Abby. She can tell us who they've got as marginal or maybe massive favourites.
There are no marginal favourites. They are very much weighted towards the home sides for the second leg. So Huddersfield are 6-5 to beat Luton. They themselves are 13-5. Forest 23-20 to beat Sheffield United, who are 12-5. And if we go to the outrights, Matt, Forest are odds on to be promoted. And we don't doubt Paddy Power because they said that UK would be for second in Eurovision. So they know what they're talking about.
I'm not even going to pass comment on that lest I jinx it. I will just swiftly say after this break, we'll discuss what happened in the League 2 playoff semi-final first legs.
So, Mr. Guardiola, what's troubling you?
I'm very tired, Doctor.
Tired, right?
No, I'm very tired of winning. It's just too easy at the moment, you know? I need a challenge.
Like finally winning the Champions League with Man City?
Hey, 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 come on.
Will Pep finally do it? At Paddy Power, we can't guarantee you a trophy, but we can guarantee you money back as a free bet if one leg of your 4+4 bet builder lets you down. Paddy Power!
Pre-match online bet builder bets only. Min odds 1-5 per leg. Max free bet £10 per day. 7-day free bet expiry. Excludes enhanced match odds. Eligibility restrictions and T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
On Saturday night, Mansfield were looking to riff on Northampton's pain following the Cobblers' final day fiasco. The Stags did get the first leg win, but it was a narrow one, 2-1 the final score at the venue formerly known as Field Mill. Clarkey, sort of similarities here perhaps with Forest in that Mansfield will be disappointed they're not taking a bigger advantage into the second game. First half particularly, they were excellent.
Yeah, it was all about how many they could get in the first half when Northampton were maybe at their most fragile. and they got two, which is pretty good work. And Oates was really dangerous, wasn't he, in the game? But they, yeah, then you have to credit Northampton for finding a way to get back into it, really, because they could have folded, but they didn't. And they stuck at it. And then they started to build up a head of steam, didn't they? And I think in the final half an hour, they were comfortably the stronger team, Northampton. They made it their type of match, used their strength. And they've got good players, probably more good players than we give them credit for. You always think of them being a set-piece team, being massive and, you know, strong. But guys like Apere up front, Hoskins, Pinnock, when they turn defence to attack on a counter, they're pretty lively, those guys. And I think that they did pretty well on the night. And for that second leg, I think Mansfield will respect Northampton's ability to give them problems. You know, you've got McWilliams, who's a good ball winner in the middle of the park. He can set those three guys away. And I think they can certainly score goals in the second leg, Northampton. It's just, can they keep Oates and co out at the other end? Because, yeah, he's very, very impressive.
And Michelle, obviously, you were covering this game, it being a playoff game on Sky Sports. Were you more impressed with Mansfield's attacking prowess in the first half or Northampton's resilience, not just in this game, but obviously coming back from the horror that was their final day of the season?
Yeah, cliche game of two halves for sure. Mansfield by far the better in the first half. Or Reece Oates was brilliant, sort of won his Man of the Match award in the first half. But I thought Jordan Barry should be Man of the Match because he got an assist and a goal. And they were just completely on top. And then John Brady must have said something decent at half time because Northampton were way different in the second half. I mean, taking it to Sixfields as it is, it's weird when these teams, and it's happened now in a few of the playoffs, scoring the late goal or scoring when it's 2-0 and then getting one back, it feels like the momentum just shifts. And even this tie that's won 2-1, you think you'd be bouncing with a 2-0 win, taking that back to Sixfields. But for Northampton, I think it was so key they got that fortunate deflected goal from Ali Koke, because if they hadn't, and they'd lost 2-0, and they'd carry on performing like they had in the first half, after what happened on the final day of the season, that would be a pretty tough ask, I think, in the second leg. Because normally it's an advantage being at home in the second leg, as we just said earlier on. But I think if you went back to Sixfields with all of that on your shoulders, it would be really hard to shake off. But it's a really tight one to call now. You know, for Northampton, probably just glad to have played after what happened on the final day. But actually, they're still in great form. Everyone feels like on the final day it's like they lost, but they didn't. And they're on a great winning run before that. So the team they'd lost to before that winning run was Mansfield. And now the team they've lost to again is Mansfield. So it's all set up beautifully in the second leg. Very close scoreline, as all the playoffs are.
Clarkie, who is the best half-time team talker you ever played for? Was there one particular gaffer who always seemed to get it right?
I'm struggling. The one that immediately comes to my head is actually the late, great Geordie Armstrong, who was my reserves manager at Arsenal. He would fit into half-time 50 to 100 swear words. It was incredible. And
I wasn't expecting you to say that.
No, exactly. And we were so immature. We were only kids, really. We were counting them up. And it was like, yeah, it was like, what do you reckon today, blah, blah. And I'm sure he could see us sniggering at times. Now, I think the best motivator I had was Paul Fairclough at Stevenage. He was tremendous, really got into players' heads. And he could definitely have that ability to change a team's mindset at half time. They're the two that stand out, really. But it's such an important time. And what I find interesting now is that managers give the players about 5 minutes normally on their own just to like gather their thoughts. And the manager, the coaches, they often just have a little bit of a chat about what they're going to say, what the key messages are, let the players settle down, and then bang, it's like 3 minutes, get those messages across. And that's all it is really these days. I don't think there's too much screaming and shouting that goes on. But I've heard from a number of current coaches, this is sort of how they go about their work at the interval. It's just pick two or three messages and really drill it down, but don't overload the players with too much.
Two more big half-time team talks coming up for Messrs. Brady and Clough on Wednesday night when the second leg of that tie is played. 2-1's very much in vogue in this season's playoffs. That was also the score at the County Ground, where Michelle watched on as Swindon earned a narrow first leg lead against Port Vale. Harry McCurdy on Instagram, wallop with about 8 P's, exclamation mark, half a job done, lovely little brace, C the letter, U the letter, all Thursday, and then 5 emojis where it's like a face with the tongue hanging out and the eyes going a bit wonky. means something to somebody. Presumably only played 8 games at Port Vale last season, Michelle, and didn't score. It did feel like a little bit personal, you know, his post-match interview where, you know, he was asked, how are they getting the best out of you? Well, playing me was his answer, which shots fired.
Yeah, he's not backwards and coming forward sometimes, is he? You can tell the way, I mean, we talked about him quite a lot pre-game and we were anticipating him carrying on his good form sort of into these playoffs, and he is a special player. It's how do you get the best out of him? And yeah, by playing me, that's a great answer, isn't it? It's a bit tongue-in-cheek. And he said he doesn't really consider Port Vale an ex-club because he didn't play there, which was a bit cheeky as well. But yeah, it felt like he had a bit of a point to prove today, the way he played. He kept running. When they were at 2-0, he won the ball back, like as Port Vale were trying to play out from the back. He got the ball and it could have been 3-0. So he was keeping going. So he seemed almost possessed at times. But then sometimes he just plays with such a hunger anyway. I don't think it's unique to this game. First goal, great movement, lost his marker, glancing header. You know, he's not the biggest player, but his marker wasn't goal side. And in it went, great delivery by Johnny Williams. And the second, he started the move. Jack Payne's shot was well saved, actually. But the technique, Adrian will know a lot better than me, but the technique to get it down on the volley like that, right, it happened right in front of us. I thought, yeah, he is a special player. And Ben Garner's getting the best out of him. And Ben Garner's done a great job at Swindon this season. Lovely to see Darragh Clark back as well on the touchline. And once again, getting that goal back from James Wilson, 2-1 now, just like we said in the other games, just completely changes the complexion of the tie, because Swindon 2-0, they're bouncing going into Thursday. And now there's a lot more to think about.
It's crazy how it's happened in all but one game we've spoken about, Adrian, isn't it? One team 2-0 up and then somebody pinches a goal back and it reframes the tie entirely.
Yeah, it's only half-time, isn't it? And that's what these managers will be talking about, 180 minutes matches. And yeah, it's just, they're all good teams. There's not much to choose between any of them, really. You only have to look at the points tallies in League Two especially. It was so, so close. On that McCurdy volley, yeah, it's the sort of volley you don't even think about. When you're on fire, you just do it instinctively, but when you're not informed, you probably don't even take that on. You don't even attempt it. Right? It was so crisp, so beautifully struck. I do love his hunger. It must be quite infectious to those around him. I think some people just love being the main man, don't they? And at other clubs, maybe he's just not been he's not had that love from a manager. He's not felt like he was ever going to be their main man. And maybe then he's trying too hard or just doesn't feel at home, or he finds because he's such an unusual character. I think he probably is the sort that might find reasons to have a moan and like moan and groan about this or that. But where he is at Swindon, there's nothing to moan about. He's the main man. The gaffer loves him. The fans love him. And I think it's just a momentum thing really with him. Fantastic individual performance again from him. But Port Vale, maybe they'll look back and think, did we pick the right team? Because I think their changes in the second half certainly seem to help them.
I think Jamie Proctor wasn't 100% fit, to be fair, to Darragh Clark. From what he said in the build-up, he said he wasn't quite there. Whether he starts him on Thursday or not, I don't know. But sometimes they were just trying to press forward a bit too much, maybe. But they were, in the first half, they were trying to be effective in breaking the game up, committed so many fouls. They saw, Matt Taylor said to me, they do it quite well in terms of disrupting the flow of teams. And I guess Darragh Clark's message would be more of that and do it more effectively with a bit more quality. They lack quality today, Port Vale, going forward, I thought.
If you come up against a team like Swindon, rough them up will be the message, I think, from most teams that come up against them. You know, knock them out of their stride, because when they do get in their stride, they don't look a League Two side, do they? They look like a side that's more than capable of playing a level up if you give them the time and space to go and do their thing. And I loved the goal, the build-up to the goal that we were talking about earlier with Jack Payne playing it into McCurdy and then making that run around the outside and he slipped back in. It's just, it's really fluid, entertaining football to watch. Yeah, I'm a big fan of what they've done this season.
That roughing up that Clarkey talks about, Michelle, is that why Ben Garner was having a whinge about the refereeing at the end of the game? I don't think the officiating helped in any way today. I thought he should have clamped down. If you set the tone, it allows the game to flow. And I don't think that happened. Is that just managerial sour grapes or has he got a point?
I think he had a point because Harry Charsley had a few challenges and you're thinking, how has he not got a yellow yet? And he finally got his yellow. And in the second half, Daryl Clark took him off because he was worried about it. The first yellow, I think, went to Josh Davison. And at that point, Port Vale had committed sort of 7 or 8 fouls. So maybe he had a point. Maybe some of them, they weren't all yellows, of course, but it did feel like he let a lot go in that first half, which was probably to Port Vale's advantage because that's how they were playing.
There was only one Port Vale yellow card for Charsley. That was it. I think it's one of those. Yeah, if he'd have clamped down on it early doors, it could have been a situation where he then had to dish out 5 or 6. So, he took the passive route, the ref, and I can see if I was the Swindon manager, I wouldn't have been happy either.
Finally, Michelle, what was it like being in the presence of Swindon Town royalty in his own kingdom?
It literally felt like it was Sam Park in FC. They love him, don't they? We couldn't walk anywhere without being stopped for photos or being chanted at. In pitch side, they were yelling his name for a good half hour in the build-up. Yeah, he's hero worship there, that's for sure. So if the whole punditry thing doesn't work out for him, I think he'll have a job somewhere doing anything at Swindon by the sounds of it. But yeah, it was nice to see him. And he has such a good inside knowledge at Swindon, to be fair. So obviously a great choice of pundit. And it was great to see Matt Taylor as well, who just seemed to be utterly relieved that they weren't in the playoffs, of course. And he'd just come back from, I'm sure he won't mind me saying, his little staff weekender. So he was on fine form considering he'd been away for the weekend. And all things considered, yeah, he was in fine form. And actually, to be fair, sounds like he's been busy sorting out the release list and things like that. It doesn't stop for managers, does it? It's not a position I envy, that's for sure.
Yeah, you can have a weekender, but that's about it. Well done to everybody on that. And to Sam, you know, we often talk about touchline clobber. I thought he was on point with his pockets square and his smart suit. So, well done, Sam. Looking forward to speaking to you on Thursday. Abby, who's going to win these League Two playoffs then, please?
The home sides, according to Paddy's Power. So Wednesday night, it's Northampton, Mansfield. Northampton, they're 13-10. The away side, Mansfield, 21-10, draw 2-1. Port Vale, 23-20 to beat Swindon, who are 23-10. However, the home sides are favourites, but they are very much like ranked down in the promotion odds for League Two. Mansfield, the favourites to get into Tier Three. They are 13-8, Swindon 7-4, Port Vale 4-1, and Northampton 9-2.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. It's over 18s only. T's and C's apply. Odds are accurate at the time of recording and when the fun stops. Stop.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. If you want to read more Football League content from the likes of Nancy Frostick, Paul Taylor, Phil Buckingham, Peter Rutzler, and more of The Athletic's best writers, you can do so by heading to theathletic.com/league show and get yourself a subscription of just £1 a month for the next 6 months. That's theathletic.com/league show.
Right, Stockport County are going to be a part of this pod next season. They were promoted back to League Two after an 11-year absence as they wrapped up the National League title on the final day of the season on Sunday. It's been a while since we've seen them, Clarkey, but there are plenty of familiar faces there. Dave Challoner obviously started this season in the EFL, the manager with Hartlepool, the likes of Madden, Sarsavic, etc. They've got a fair bit of money behind them. You'd expect them to be competitive.
Very, yeah. I think they're going to be among the favourites, actually, to be towards the top end of the division. It's a great achievement for the manager, isn't it? It really is. Because he was under pressure. He walked away from the job. So he took Hartlepool up and then sort of walked away from taking them to the next level in the EFL to take this job. He set himself up there for potentially for a fall, but it's all worked brilliantly. And yeah, he's had a great budget, it has to be said. And Paddy Madden was banging them in League One, wasn't he? Not that long ago. So he's got some quality players there, and probably should have got them up. But to beat Wrexham, who are equally wealthy, I think is a kudos to him. So yeah, well done, Stockport. Look forward to covering them. I played against Stockport when they were in the Championship. So, you know, they've had quite a fall over recent times.
And they got a blueprint, Michelle, haven't they, in Sutton this season? We saw how close they came to making the playoffs with a far inferior budget to what Stockport have got. And actually, over the last few years, we've seen that gap between National League and the top end of the National League, at least, and League Two is pretty small.
And that's the thing. There's more and more teams going full-time, not just in the National League, but even in the leagues below that. It's incredible what teams are doing now. And there's teams, obviously, in the National League with bigger budgets than those who are in League Two. You've seen it with Salford. It doesn't always work out. You don't always go straight through. It's not that cut and dry. But yeah, credit to what Sutton have done this year. Completely different scenarios. Just shows it isn't always all about the money. But wow, it helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the crowds, Matt, they've been selling out. They've been getting, you know, five-figure attendances. It's brilliant. It's wonderful to see. I just hope that they can carry on that momentum at the club and get those people through the gate week in, week out in League Two. I'm sure if they're winning games, they'll keep turning up.
Yeah, good luck to them for next season. We'll be talking more about the new campaign. Right, before we go, this weekend, I couldn't watch the Sheffield United Forest game in the conventional manner because I was at a wedding. So I managed to stream it on my phone during the reception, which was met with a frosty reception by some. But still, I got to see the majority of the match. It leads me to ask, what's the weirdest place you've ever watched a football match? Michelle, you're usually pretty good at these end bits, so I'm expecting something good here.
I feel pressure. Well, it's the same as you. It's a wedding. My husband's friend got married, Champions League night, Liverpool, Real Madrid. Don't support either of them, but it was a big night. And it was literally in the middle of nowhere in Devon. And I was walking around, the reception was in a pub. And I was, honestly, they had like beams. And I was just placing the phone as far up the beam as I could to try and find it. So Adam and I, we actually didn't know anyone else at the wedding because the other friends couldn't come and things. And I would say about 60 minutes, the groom came and sat with us and watched the final 30 minutes. So I don't know if his new wife was too happy about that. But at our wedding, it wasn't a football match. But it was the Rugby World Cup 2015 and everyone had disappeared. And we were stupid enough to put on Wales v England, weren't we? Because I'm half Welsh. There was loads of Welsh people there. There was loads of English people there. So it was just me on the dance floor for an hour. But you know what? I had a great time.
Magnificent. Clarkie, I rattled my wife's aunt by answering her question about something fairly trivial with, oh, for f***'s sake, when Sander Berger scored in the 91st minute. Have you ever done something similar or watched a game in an even more inappropriate place than a wedding?
Not really. On the wedding thing, just very quickly, I was at a wedding the night Man United played in the Champions League final against Barcelona.
No way.
And it was in the Cotswolds, so like it was miles away from London. And this lad who was pretty good friends with the groom was at the whole thing. He was at the wedding. He sat down, when we all stood, started to do the thing, get ready for the meal. And then midway through the meal, there were suddenly two empty seats. And it was like, where's he gone then? Where's he gone? And he just didn't come back. Later that night, the texts were coming through. He's at Wembley taking photos.
He's at Wembley?
He bailed out of the wedding. He took the meal and then did a runner, which was quite outrageous. I don't think they spoke for quite some time, but he is a big old Man United fan. So, yeah, it doesn't come right.
If you have tickets, that's fair enough.
Exactly.
The wedding
exactly.
Surely was booked first, but...
I haven't really watched a game anywhere weird. When I went on holiday to the Maldives, which I'm still can't quite believe
someone's
went there,
doing well.
I couldn't sleep one night, and I started to put my I started to listen to a game on it was TalkSport in my headphones, so everyone else was sleeping. It was the middle of the night, and I just had Chelsea v Leeds on, and it was Dance on commentary. And I texted him and said, listening from the Maldives, sounding great, mate, blah, blah, blah. And he name-checked me on air within seconds, which was quite pleasant. I couldn't really sort of, say anything about what was going on because they were all snoozing, but it was a nice little moment.
Lovely stuff. Listen, at wherever you're going to be watching the second legs of the playoff ties, I hope you enjoy them, unless you're a Sheffield United fan, I have to be brutally honest. We will round up everything that happens between now and Thursday when we return for our second show of the week. Do join us for that if you can. Until then, many thanks to Michelle, to Adrian, to Abby and to you. We'll speak to you again later in the week. It's bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and keep up to date with everything Totally by heading to @TheTotallyShow on Twitter and on Insta. Find out the latest subscription offers by going to theathletic.com/leagueshow. The Totally Football League Show is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.